Oh, man. I think Darren puts all of his effort into booking the Friday shows because they're just always amazing Friday shows. I don't think anybody's going to want to miss a minute of the program today. Second hour, we're going to do the game show with Trent Horn. We'll see if Trent will get all the answers right. I know that because I gave him the answers. But we'll have two contestants vying for a fabulous room full of gifts and prizes. This hour, we talk about spiritual perfectionism. Is that an affliction or is that a good thing? And Jesus called for us to be perfect as our Father in heaven is perfect. I often wonder, did he know how stressed out we were going to be when he said that? Our number, 888-318-7884, if you are maybe afflicted with the kind of spiritual perfectionism that gives you anxiety or scrupulosity, you're welcome to call. If you'd like to know what it means to be perfect in God's eyes, following God's way instead of our own, you're welcome to call. 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is Colleen Carol Campbell, and I bet you know her from her time as anchor of EWTN's News Nightly with Colleen Carol Campbell and as creator and host of EWTN's Faith and Culture television and radio show. She is an award-winning author and print broadcast and broadcast journalist. She was a speechwriter for George W. Bush, who we found out this week doesn't like Nirvana, and she was also the editor, was an editorial writer and op-ed columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. She brings us our topic because it goes with the title of her new book and the theme of her new book, The Heart of Perfection, How the Saints Taught Me to Trade My Dream of Perfect for God's. Colleen Carol Campbell, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Sorry, I had a little freeze there. Happy to have you with us.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, okay.
And but I didn't. We had a momentary blip. But
I thought I had put you to sleep already. So
do you know what I'm referring to with George W. Bush and the
You know,
Nirvana?
I didn't follow that. You got to tell me that. Oh, okay. I usually follow the news about him.
But. Apparently, Nirvana had an album with perhaps it was vulgar song on it. And his daughter Jenna just said that she was doing an interview, and she just said that when he heard it, he destroyed the CD. And that is, I can't believe that's not on the top of your news. That's, everyone else is freaking out that George Bush destroyed a Nirvana CD.
Well, he does have grandkids to think about now. So,
yeah. Well, he did this when she was a kid. So,
okay. I see. Yeah. So it's a traumatic story from childhood. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Okay. So I started with that kind of tongue-in-cheek question about, did Jesus know how stressed out we are going to be when he says, be perfect like your Father in heaven is perfect? Is that meant to stress us out? It's hard to hear something like that and not feel some kind of stress.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that goes double in a culture where we're seeing perfectionism as an epidemic. I mean, everywhere we look, we're hearing about perfectionism. There's a new study that came out just a few weeks ago, or a couple months ago, actually, millennials being the most perfectionist generation in history. So we know this is a big problem. And in religious circles, and I think especially among committed Christians, faithful Catholics, this can be a real issue because we hear those words in scripture and we think, oh my gosh, I have to be flawless yesterday and I can't do this. And that's where the perfectionist trap begins to kick in. And no, I don't think it's at all what Jesus intended for us.
So you say the saints taught you to trade your dream of the perfect for God's. What does that mean?
Well, I began to recognize that I had a struggle with perfectionism about 9 years ago when I had my twins. I have four children now, but when I first became a mother, I noticed that all of these perfectionist tendencies that I had used to think were assets, and I didn't call them perfectionism, they were going to be a real problem in motherhood because life doesn't unfold exactly according to your timeline and expectations. I was failing my own expectations as a mother. Right. Anytime I made the slightest mistake, I was sure I'd screwed up my kids for life, and I was beating myself up, and a friend actually said, you know, there's no room for perfectionism in motherhood. And I began to look at this perfectionism in my own life, and I saw that it was rooted not just in cultural ideas, but in really the way I thought God was looking at me, that I had to earn his love in a sense, work my way to heaven. And so when I began looking at that, I thought, well, I better avoid the saints because they're these spiritual overachievers who are just going to trigger me.
Right. But, yeah, you would think that, huh?
Well, like my last book, My Sisters, the Saints, was all about the saints. And I thought maybe that's my problem. I'm spending too much time looking at the saints. But I went back and took a second look at a lot of these saints and new saints I hadn't got to know before, and found that many of them all of them that I looked at in The Heart of Perfection, it wasn't their perfectionist striving that brought them to holiness. It was surrender. And it was when they let go of perfectionism, it was their recovery from perfectionism that really paved the way to their heroic virtue. And that was a surprise to me to know that there are recovering perfectionists in the canon of saints.
Do you think it's, I mean, you talked about this young generation being the most perfectionist ever. Is it a social media thing? Is it that you're just, life is a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week competition?
Well, it's funny. Si, I mean, everybody asks me about that. So I think it's obviously on our minds. And I think it's a huge piece of the equation. I mean, this is also a generation, at least in America, that's religiously unaffiliated at historic rates. So we're seeing this disconnect from the faith. And then there's also this sense of being constantly compared to others on our screens. And I think those two go together. But even when you're in the faith, you can feel this sense of I have to be better or this as good as everyone around me. And we can start importing this even into our spiritual lives. I have to be holier. I have to be doing as many good works as the next guy. My kids have to be looking as flawless as the next gals. And so I think this manifests all over the place. But I do think millennials are growing up in a really tough time with this problem.
But it's not a new problem, though, because like the word scrupulosity, that's an old word. It's not an easy word to say either. But this is something that there is a long history of the church dealing with and that spiritual masters kind of being able to help people with.
Exactly. And it was when I began to look at words like scrupulosity, when the saints talk about discouragement, when they talk about secret pride, and they have all of these terms, and often they don't use the term perfectionism, although it's interesting, every once in a while you find it. Francis de Sales accuses Jane de Chantal of being a perfectionist, and he would know, he went through his own bout of perfectionism. So they do use that occasionally, but usually they do use words like scrupulosity. And what they're getting at really is this sense of a distorted image of God, one in which we think he's constantly waiting for us to mess up. And we see our failures and think beating ourselves up over those and obsessing over those is some sort of path to holiness. But really, as the recovering perfectionist saints taught me, and as I wrote about in The Heart of Perfection, that's not a path to holiness. It's a very dangerous detour.
Colleen Carol Campbell is our guest. The book is The Heart of Perfection, How the Saints Taught Me to Trade My Dream of Perfect for God's. Our number 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. So it sounds like the healing from perfectionism, spiritual perfectionism, is actually a kind of healing of our image of God. And how do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big piece of it. There are a number of different pieces, and you know, I go into more detail in the book, but I do think that's a huge part of it. Alphonsus Liguori is a great example of this. He struggled mightily with scruples, and it was something he went, you know, every once in a while he'd have a flare up again, so it wasn't something one and done. He was finished with it. But where he really turned a corner from being someone whose faith was completely rooted in fear, in this sense of shame of I'm not good enough, I'm not living up to it, to one being rooted in love that he then shared with others and went on to be the most celebrated moral theologian in Catholic history, precisely because he brought balance back to the church at a time when everyone was going to one extreme or the other. Where things really changed for Alphonsus is when a bishop he knew said to him, where are you getting your image of God? Is it the image of your earthly father? Because his earthly father was a raging perfectionist, drove him very hard. He was never good enough for dad. And when he started to go back into the Gospels and read what Jesus said to describe our loving Heavenly Father, when he started to go deep into scripture, reading it with the eyes of the church always, he began to see a whole different picture of who God was and what God was calling him to. And then he went on to share that with the world. So I do think healing our image of God and looking back even, you know, into our own personal history, where have we picked up images of God that aren't really the truth? They aren't the truth that the church and scripture reveal to us.
888-318-7884, the number. I will not monopolize Colleen Carol Campbell. I will let you talk to her. A lot of times I am accused on this show, sometimes by people in this building, of when we have a very engaging guest, I don't let the callers talk to them. I just talk to them. So I'm not going to do that today. I do have to let you know, before we take our first break, the spring store-wide sale is just about used up. You're in your last days. This weekend, you can enter the promo code SPRING19 when you check out at shop.catholic.com. But that'll be it. Once the weekend is over, the sale is over, and that 15% off everything goes away. So if you've got something you want from shop.catholic.com, head over there this weekend. Put in that promo code SPRING19 when you check out and get 15% off everything.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support. On the web at CatholicChemistry.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
We need Catholic radio because we need the voice of the Church in the public forum. We live in a time that the secular voice dominates so thoroughly that we need to get that Catholic perspective out. Just as Fulton Sheen used radio and TV in the last century, we need to continue to use. This means to announce the Catholic faith in the public forum.
Bishop Robert Barron thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Spiritual perfectionism is our topic today. If you are afflicted with perfectionism, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. If you'd like to hear a little bit about what God thinks about you and about you becoming perfect, you are also welcome to call 888-318-7884. Colleen Carol Campbell is our guest, and she's a big deal broadcaster, and so everything is going wrong with our broadcast. I feel like this is a little message. Get over our perfectionism here, maybe. But we're really happy to have you, and we're going to get the equipment working. But for those of you who are trying to listen on Facebook or YouTube right now, there is a whole team of people working on that machine, and we'll be up shortly. Again, 888-31-TRUTH, the number. Colleen, you feel ready to take calls?
Sure.
All right. Let's go to Mary in Houston, Texas. Mary, you are first up with Colleen Carol Campbell. Your question, please.
Hi. I don't know if this is appropriate for the topic. I don't know if I'm being a perfectionist or not. I don't think so. But we go on an annual family vacation, and I have lots of adults, young adults that are in our family, and we all rent a house together. It's wonderful to do that. And I have a couple of nieces that are engaged to be married, and they're also cohabiting with their fiancés. And so when we're all staying in this family vacation home, they want to continue that cohabitation under the same roof with their Aunt Mary, who is a practicing Catholic, and then their grandmother, who's also a practicing Catholic. And I guess I'm wondering, is this a time when you say, you know what, I can't stay in that house? Is that being, I mean, I guess, where do you draw the line?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough issue, but I think you do need to stand up for what you believe in and be in a situation you feel comfortable with, you feel you can live with. So I don't think that's a case of the kind of perfectionism we're talking about. And in fact, sometimes trying to please others, being a people pleaser, that can actually be an outgrowth of this sense of needing to be perfect in everyone's eyes. So no, I wouldn't say that falls under that that particular issue. That you know, those kind of cases are thorny because you're trying to be charitable and you're trying to be truth at the same time. You're trying to share the truth of the faith and your own values. So I certainly don't think you know, that there's something perfectionistic about speaking out about what you believe. But I do think that it's always, you know, like we're always told, to do it in love, to do it with charity, to look for opportunities where we can witness to why we believe in what we believe and to the joy of the faith. I think this is one thing that sometimes we can forget, especially those of us who are living in a culture that is sometimes really hostile to our values, where it feels like we're the only ones trying to live this way, is to remember that we want to always impart that joy of Jesus wherever we go, even when we're in the midst of the struggle, even when we got to stand alone on something where we feel embarrassed and ashamed. We have to remember to project that joy because that comes from Jesus. And no matter what our circumstances are about, I think that's very important. And I think that can be a signal when we are falling into a spiritual perfectionism or a sort of a critical spirit, when we feel so inundated by so many of these difficult situations that we start to just get really down and kind of put up all the defenses. That can be an area where we can fall into trouble, but not simply in speaking out about what we believe. That's what we're called to do as Christians.
How's that strike you, Mary?
Well, I mean, I agree with everything that you said. I guess the point is that I think I have to make a choice. And so, and I'm really happy to make that choice because, and I guess my choice, I feel like has to be that I don't go. And I, because I really do think it's kind of being a hypocrite to go and kind of, you know, act as if there's nothing. Because if I go and I speak the truth in, even if I did it in charity and love, you know, it'd be kind of like, well, who cares? kind of thing. And I guess I feel like the best thing would be to do is to continue to contact them and be in joyous. We're going to a wedding first. And so to go to the wedding, of course, and enjoy that and then go home and not do the vacation. I mean, I feel like it would be a really uncomfortable situation for me. That's not the reason that I don't want to go, but I just feel like it would be so hypocritical of me and I to go. So,
yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like you have discerned this and you have a pretty clear sense of what the Lord is calling you to do. So I would do what you feel he's asking you to do. And I think be comfortable in that and accept the fact that you might get a little flack for it. And that's, you know, again, that's kind of part of the narrow way, right? Not everybody's going to agree with what we do, but we do what the Lord is asking us to do. It sounds like you've got a pretty clear sense of what you need to do.
Mary, thank you very, very much for that call. I appreciate it. Colleen Carol Campbell is our guest. Her brand new book is The Heart of Perfection, How the Saints Taught Me to Trade My Dream of Perfect for God's. You talked a little bit about this being a growing realization to you as you became a mother. And God graciously started you out with twins, which I'm sure is like, good luck being perfect now, Colleen.
Right.
But I wonder about our own anxiety as parents, that we want our children to be a success in life. We want them to have all those things, you know, do well on their SATs and all that. We want them to, you know, if we're Catholic parents, we want them to have the faith and have it right away with no falling or you know, falling away.
Right.
Just get the faith and stick with it until you die. And can that get in the way, or is there a way? I guess the way I want to ask it is, as a mother and as a person who has considered these things, is there a way to be helpful to your children and not be the overly perfectionist parent?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I do think it's a balance. I think we have to be careful in our culture because our culture is telling us constantly, yeah, perfectionism is an epidemic. We got to get rid of this. But the culture's answer is lower your standards. Let it go. You know, hey, you know, let your kids do what they want. Let them figure it out. Be their friend. No, I mean, we know that we are called to holiness, and that's a hard calling. So we don't want to lower our standards. And I think this is an important distinction to make that I sort of hammer home in my book, The Heart of Perfection. And that is that longing we have deep within us for perfection, that longing we have for our children to be close to Jesus and to practice the faith, that's a good thing. God put it there. That longing for the perfect is really, at its root, a longing for God. So we don't want to squelch that. We don't want to ignore that. What we do want to do, though, is recognize that there are limits to what we can control, and that every good work and every good thing that happens to our children or ourselves, it always begins with grace. We have to cooperate with grace, and we want to teach our children to do the same, but it always begins with grace. So there's that tension between wanting the best for our children, and that's a good thing, and at the same time accepting that ultimately God loves them even more than we do, and we have to let some things in his hands. But I think it's very important as parents not to fall into the trap of saying, you know, I'm just going to be Miss Easygoing and whatever you want to do, and God will work it out. Not at all. I mean, come over to my house. My kids don't have basically any screen time. I mean, we don't even have a TV, and I homeschool. So, I mean, I'm not going to tell anybody to just relax. You know, obviously I'm working pretty hard to make sure my children are raised differently.
Right.
But at the same time, I know at the end of the day, I don't control everything. And there's going to come a time where I'm going to have to let go even more as they grow up. And I got to be ready for that and trust that God's got this, even if I don't.
888-318-7884, the number. Colleen Carol Campbell, our guest. That word trust keeps coming up. That seems to be at the heart of the message of your book, The Heart of Perfection.
Yes, I think it is. Because, you know, fear, again, with that distorted image of God that we get. And also, there's a fear in our culture that we're going to be different, that we're going to be too different. There's something the researchers called social perfectionism, and St. Francis of Assisi was a great example of this. You know, we think of him as, you know, just marching off stark naked after that encounter with his dad in front of the bishop, and he embraces evangelical poverty, and that's the end of the story. But if you really look at his story, it took years and many crises for him to get to the point where he was ready to make that real break with the world's expectations of him. So we have to remember that a piece of this perfectionism can be trying to look great in the eyes of the world at the same time we're trying to do what God is calling us to do. And at some point, we have to make a choice. And, you know, the narrow way, the way to gospel perfection, the way that all of these recovering perfectionist saints have ultimately embraced, it's not one that's necessarily going to impress the world. It might not even impress our friends at church, but it's the one God is calling us to.
Wow. Because I really do want to impress my friends at church. That, you know what I'm saying? But I think
we all do.
That's a good, like, the, it seems like the hardest perfectionism maybe to give up. Maybe this just says more about me than about reality, I don't know, but is that reputational perfectionism?
Yes.
I want a good reputation. I don't want to be thought ill of.
That's right. And there's so many ways in which doing what looks good in the eyes of the world, even in the eyes of our friends at church, you know, well, I'm doing 1,000 things, you know, and maybe my home life's falling apart, but look at me doing 1,000 good things. Or
right.
I'm running all around. I'm kind of crowding out time for prayer or scripture or the sacraments, but look at me running around being, you know, Miss Catholic Perfect, whatever. So
yeah.
It can be very dangerous. And that's where discernment comes in. And Ignatius of Loyola, those discernment rules, those were forged in the midst of a very fierce struggle he had with spiritual perfectionism. And they're a great guide for us today.
In the chapter, I think it was Pilgrims and Strangers. I think I have that.
Or, yeah, that's right.
Oh, I did? Okay, because there's a similar title to a Walker Percy book. Strangers in a Strange Land. But the, it strikes me that you're that when you talk about Jesus and his desire for us to be perfected, it comes back to the word love, being perfected in love.
That's exactly right. And Thérèse of Lisieux is a great example of this. I discuss her a lot in my last chapter of The Heart of Perfection because, you know, a lot of us know about her little way. I wrote a lot about her in my last book, My Sisters, the Saints, and I thought I kind of had the little way understood. But when I looked back at her through this prism of perfectionism, and Brother Joseph Schmidt has some great books that look at her in this light too, in some depth there. But when I took a second look at her hypersensitivity, her people-pleasing, her scrupulosity, I started to see, you know, our recovering perfectionist. And it was one who could only really bear the fruit of that little way, really embrace that charity that she's known for when she let go of beating herself up every time she fell short. So that love, she had to really internalize that love that God had for her, even and especially in the midst of her weakness. That's when you see her begin to show that love to others. And so much of that is forgiveness. It's forgiving others, yes, for their faults. It's also forgiving ourselves. Saying, yeah, I screwed up again. I can't believe I still have this fault. But God's forgiven me, so I'm going to forgive myself and keep moving forward.
I only just do my faults once, and then I never never go back. I'm not one of those people goes back to the same thing. Yeah, Father, our chaplain here, Father Hugh Barber, says sometimes people will say, I'm tired of confessing the same sin over and over again. And he says, well, don't come up with a new one. Like, just keep working on that one. That's fine.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and Pope Francis had a saying years ago. I remember he said, it's we who get tired of asking for forgiveness. It's not God who gets tired of forgiving us. It's definitely the other way around.
And have the sacraments played a role in your letting go of your perfectionism?
Oh, well, certainly. I mean, the sacraments obviously as a faithful Catholic are extremely important to me. And so much of our life in the church, it's all about grace, you know, and sometimes that's misunderstood as Catholics. There's this sense, oh, you're about works and not grace. No, I mean, to me, everything about the sacramental economy is about this grace that's undeserved that I could never attain myself. And that really strengthens us. But, you know, I think it's important to remember, especially when you're first starting out in the spiritual walk, you think, all right, I'm going to daily mass or I'm in Eucharistic adoration every day. So life is going to be easy sailing, right? And the further we advance, the more we recognize, boy, it seems like it's getting harder. And it seems like I'm seeing more parts of myself that need work, not fewer. But that's a gift. And the saints tell us, yeah, that's a sign that you're actually growing because you're seeing more and more. If God showed us everything the first day, we'd probably throw in the towel and walk off and just join the rest of the spiritual drifters out there, right? But, you know, he gives it to us as we can accept us, but he always gives us the grace along with the knowledge of what needs to change. And that's the key. We got to remember the grace is there.
888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. The Heart of Perfection, How the Saints Taught Me to Trade My Dream of Perfect for God's. Colleen Carroll Campbell is the author, and she is our guest this hour. And did you have a particular saint that you favored more than the others that helped you with this one or gave you?
You know, yeah, one that really resonated with me, maybe because I didn't know much about her before, was Jane de Chantal. She was a mother of four, so I could relate to that. And she was passionately in love with her husband, but she lost him at age 29, the same week she gave birth to their fourth child. So here she is, widowed at 29, and goes through a massive struggle with Francis de Sales helping her get out of perfectionism.
All right, we got to hear more about, you're like a pro. Oh, she heard the music. She said, oh, I have to stop talking. Usually people just keep talking. I want to hear more about Jane de Chantal when we come back and about that overcoming her perfectionism with the help of Francis de Sales, who's the great modern kind of teacher of the spiritual life for most of us.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Hey everyone, Carlo Broussard here. Did you know that you can arrange for me and a host of other on-fire Catholic Answers speakers to speak at your conference or parish event? Here's how you do it. Go to CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com and you'll find all the information that you need to book me or our other great speakers. That's CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com. We look forward to seeing you.
In his new audio presentation, The Very First Fathers, apologist Jimmy Akin takes you on a tour of the earliest Christian writings outside the New Testament, from the most famous figures and most notable works to those lesser known but no less important. This pivotal time in the development of the early church is revealed in fascinating detail. Jimmy shows how, even in the first century after the resurrection, it was necessary to defend and explain truths that are still under attack today, such as the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist and the perpetual virginity of Mary. The Very First Fathers is a compelling look at the dawn of the Christian age and edifying listening for anyone who wants to understand and defend the full truth of Catholicism. Order your copy of The Very First Fathers today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Have you subscribed to the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter? This is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I want to tell you about our new weekly newsletter full of behind-the-scenes information and facts you need to know about the show. It's easy to sign up. Just visit CatholicAnswersLive.com and look for the newsletter sign-up box on the front of the page. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's happening with the show and see what's coming in the days ahead, delivered weekly into your inbox. Sign up today for the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter and see what you've been missing. Go to CatholicAnswersLive.com. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Second hour. Oh, I see him right now. He just walked into the studio. Trent Horn's going to be here, and we're going to do the game show. And that's always a lot of fun. A chance to have fun with Trent, and also you can test your knowledge while the contestants vie for a fabulous room full of gifts and prizes. That's coming up next hour. This hour, we've got Colleen Carroll Campbell with us. Her latest book is The Heart of Perfection, How the Saints Taught Me to Trade My Dream of Perfect for God's. You probably know Colleen Carroll Campbell from her EWTN shows, News Nightly, and Faith and Culture, neither of which she is doing right now because she's homeschooling four kids and writing books. Colleen, we have callers for you, and I want to get to them. Let us go to Herman in Manning, South Dakota. Herman, you're there with us?
Yes, I'm in North Dakota.
Oh, I thought Manning was in North Dakota. Go ahead, Herman, your question for Colleen.
Well, we know that the perfect people go straight into heaven. And we know that Mary was perfect. She went straight to heaven. Probably Joseph and the saints. But the most of us will not be perfect when we die. And we know that. And so what part does purgatory have in making us perfect?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. Certainly we know from our Catholic faith that that is where we are, you know, prepared to meet God. So that is a big part of it. But I think it's interesting to note that some of the saints actually wrote, I think it was Alphonsus Liguori said, no one is perfect before he reaches the kingdom of heaven. And so I think, you know, every single fault we have may not be wiped away until, yes, purgatory, but even some of the saints said they were still wrestling with some persistent faults. But it's that perfect love of God, and I think we can sometimes need to make that distinction between what looks totally perfect and what is the perfect love of God, that perfect surrender to God. I think that's where holiness consists. And I think that's what we see in these recovering perfectionist saints. It's not, you know, Alphonsus Liguori had a bout of scruples right before he died. A lot of these saints were still struggling right to the end, but it was that perfect surrender, that trust, that love. And it was something that they saw as a work in progress all the way to the end. And wouldn't have pronounced themselves perfect. So I think those terms can be a little tricky, but I think that's important to remember that even many of the saints said, hey, we're not going to reach this fully until we're standing before God.
Herman, thank you very, very much for that. I forgot that we were going to go back to talking about Jane de Chantal, who you said is a saint because she had four children, right? Is that what you're saying?
No.
And as a mother of four children, I can see what your standards are now.
No. Right. She was amazing because she was a hardcore striver. And if you've heard anything about her, you might have heard she's the patron saint of gentleness. Her order that she helped start with Francis, the Visitation Order, their main charism is gentleness. Okay, I don't have much to learn from you because it's not really like my natural, I don't know, it just didn't appeal to me that much. Well, I got to know her and I found out she was quite a pistol. From 4 years old, she was having theological arguments with her father's Calvinist lawyers. And, you know, they give her sugar plums to get rid of her and she'd throw them in the fire and say, that's what happens when you don't believe our Lord's words about the Eucharist. So this cow is a spitfire. And she took that intensity and determination into her spiritual life. She took it into her motherhood. And when she found herself widowed with these kids, she had to move in with her father-in-law who was carrying on an affair with his mistress. I mean, it was a disaster. And she had this spiritual director who mistakenly thought the best thing to deal with the perfectionist is to just drive him harder. So she's staying up all night praying. She's hardly eating anything because she's on so many heroic fasts and she's fallen apart. And she's basically on the brink of a nervous breakdown when she meets Francis de Sales, who says, whoa. And one of his first quotes in one of his early letters to her is, Jane, you're too much of a perfectionist about your faith. And he begins to show her a different way. The way of what he calls the little virtues, gentleness, simplicity, patience, you know, humility. And he shows her how the building blocks of real holiness, as Jesus lays out in the gospel, it's not the heroic feats. It's not the amazing fast that no one can believe. It's not these excruciating penances. It's being cheerful when she's interrupted by her kids. It's shushing her friends when they badmouth her in-laws. It's going easier on others as a result of recognizing that God isn't looking at her with that harshness that she thinks he's looking at her with. And there's where you begin to see that Jane begins to grow into this paragon of gentleness, but it did not come easy to her. And in many ways, it was easier for her to do those all-night prayer vigils than to be kind to those who were so difficult for her.
Wow, she sounds really cool. I feel like both my daughters are young women now, and it just seems so brutal on women, this idea of every kind of perfection is demanded of you, that maybe Jane is kind of a good model.
She is. And, you know, they were all trying to marry her off as soon as her husband died. And, you know, she was very much struggling in a culture that for how many hundreds of years separate us. It's amazing how close these saints are to us in the struggles that they've waged.
Up next, Tyler in Rochester, New York, listening on the Station of the Cross. Happy to have you here. Tyler, you have a question for Colleen Carol Campbell?
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
So my question is, how would you recommend discerning between God's will and anxiety, specifically relating to like discernment of vocation and things like that? And how does time play a role in that? Sometimes I find that I may be like rushing for an answer from the Lord.
That's a great question, Tyler. You know, I talk a lot about this in the fifth chapter of The Heart of Perfection, where I talk about Ignatius of Loyola and his own discovery that of these, you know, his discernment rules, which you've probably heard of, they're very biblical, and they grew out of his own struggles with discouragement and distraction. And he found that sense of drivenness. This is one of the more subtle rules, and Timothy Gallagher is a great author who goes into more depth on this, but he talks about how when we feel that sense of compulsion, gotta do this right now, the right way, before the opportunity evaporates, that is often a clue that that's not what God's calling us to do. He talks about how when we're dealing with the will of God, if we're living in a state of grace, if we're not in a state of serious sin, it almost feels like water dripping into a sponge, just absorbing that will. It feels peaceful. And what's not God's will feels very harsh, hurried, compulsive, almost like a lot of racket. And that's a very subtle distinction, I understand. And I can go into more detail in my book, The Heart of Perfection. But what I think is important to remember there is that time and that patience is part of the discernment process. And that prayer, sometimes God just will not reveal it right on our timeline. And for me, at least, the impatience of my perfectionist personality, that's a real struggle. But that in itself is time for growth. And that incremental progress and those answers that are slow to come, as difficult as they are, that's the road to sanctity for many of us. And it certainly was for the recovering perfectionist saints.
What do you make of that, Tyler?
I greatly appreciate it. I'm in the RCIA process right now. And so just trying to learn about all this is very interesting for me. So thank you very much.
Oh, Tyler, well, congratulations on being in the RCIA. Yes. I will pray for you that goes well. And as you go through the next year or so, as you're doing that, you're always welcome to call. We do open forum here every Tuesday and Thursday. Is that the thing that's giving you anxiety, a question about whether or not you are called into the Catholic faith?
No, just terms of, like, vocation within the church of, like, celibacy versus marriage. And so I've had a couple people tell me just to slow down and wait until I become Catholic first. So just kind of, that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, and often I think we get overwhelmed by everything this life is going to entail. I mean, that's what happened to Ignatius. He had this big conversion. He gets into his faith, and all of a sudden, you know, he's finding himself just overwhelmed, both by his past life, but looking forward, going, can I keep this up, this intensity, what I'm trying to become? This is overwhelming. And that's where we need to remember that voice that just says, you got to do this right away. This is going to be such a burden. That isn't the voice of the Lord. The Lord is going to be with us in every step of the way. He's going to give you the grace every step of the way. And sometimes all he's asking us to do is just take the next right step and leave the future in his hands, which goes back to trust again.
Thanks, Tyler. Will you call us again sometime?
Sure thing.
All right. God bless you, brother. Colleen Carol Campbell is our guest. The Heart of Perfection, How the Saints Taught Me to Trade My Dream of Perfect for God's. That's the title of her latest book. May is the month of Mary, and this is the last day of May. And I think that might mean, oh no, not today. They'll have it for the weekend. I have a note here that says we got it for the weekend, that free ebook that we've got for you. The book is called Queen of Heaven, Ever Virgin, Full of Grace. As you might guess, it's a book, an ebook devoted to Mary. We don't want to charge you for it. We just want you to have it in honor of Mary's month, which is closing out today. Just go over to shop.catholic.com. You'll see a banner there that says Queen of Heaven on the banner. Click that banner, and you're going to get yourself a free ebook, Queen of Heaven, Ever Virgin, Full of Grace.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I come from the other side of the tracks, see? My uncle used to have slot machines. Put one nickel in and it's emptied. And I brought him home in a bag, and my mother looked at me. Where did you get all that money? I said, I won them. You didn't win them. He fixed the machine. I didn't care if he fixed the machine or not, you know?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Trent better be fun. You know, the game show, close the week with the game show. It's supposed to be fun. Has anybody talked to him about that? That he's supposed to be fun today? Could you maybe, guys, take the next few minutes, find Trent, tell him it's supposed to be fun? Because we're doing the game show next hour, the Catholic Answers Game Show. The title of which is, what do we call it now? Catholic Answers Game Show or Catholic Answers? Yeah, I think we call it Catholic Answers Game Show. It's a heck of a title. Or quiz show. All right. This hour, we have Colleen Carol Campbell. Of much renown, including a host of several shows on EWTN and a journalist who has been published pretty much everywhere where journalists get published. She was once a speechwriter for President George W. Bush, and she has a brand new book called The Heart of Perfection, How the Saints Taught Me to Trade My Dream of Perfect for God's. It is available now. You have somebody in there that's not a saint.
I do. I have a notorious heretic gets her own chapter in The Heart of Perfection.
Did you inform EWTN of this fact before we booked you for this show?
No.
You put a heretic in this thing. So why Angelique Arnold? Why is she in there?
She's in there because she's a cautionary tale. And I think she's especially apropos for our time. So part of where this came from is, okay, I love Jane de Chantal, but who wouldn't recover from perfectionism if you had a doctor of the church as your spiritual director and BFF, right?
Yeah.
So I was intrigued to find out there was another woman, same time, same kind of circumstances. She founded a religious community. Actually, Mother Superior at an important convent in France. And she also had Francis de Sales for a time as her spiritual director. And she also was a recovering perfectionist, except she didn't recover. She went in the other direction.
Oh.
And this advice he gave Jane, Angelique, you know, in one ear, out the other. And she grew increasingly hard on herself, hard on her nuns, hard on her critics. She was a voice of reform in a church at the time in France that was a mess. There was a lot of corruption, and she was right to be mad about a lot of it. But increasingly, her faith hardened into an ideology. It wasn't a living, loving relationship with Jesus anymore. It was kind of a club to hit her enemies over the head with. And her nuns were all about the external penances and all about the rules, but they kind of lost sight of, for instance, evangelization. No time for that. They were all just trying to claw their own way to heaven. And so this story is really interesting because I think the important part about Angelique is when she lost her joy. She lost her joy in the faith. Things turned out very badly. And she grew into a woman known as the Mistress of Jansenism. And with her help, the Jansenist heresy, probably the most notorious perfectionist heresy in church history, took off first in France and then all over the world. And this is something the church had to fight for hundreds of years. Four different popes condemned it. And Angelique did not let it go because it spoke to her perfectionism, and she was not willing to let that go. And she lost her joy. So I think we need to be careful. We don't want to go down that road. And sometimes in a crazy culture, we can think, I just got to go as far to the other extreme as possible. But actually, Angelique is a good reminder. We don't want to do that.
That strikes me that is actually something that we see happening. And I know that me even mentioning this will maybe make some people mad, but there is a kind of burgeoning community of very angry Catholics, angry at both the church and at the world. And there, like you said, there is plenty to be angry about. That's not an unreasonable response, but it's nonetheless dangerous. It feels joyless. It feels like a joyless Catholicism.
That's right. And Francis de Sales warned Angelique of this. He died, and then she found a new spiritual director, the founding father of Jansenism. But before he died, he told her, be careful. You want to pray for reform in the church. Pray for God to use you in that. I see everything you see. I'm not telling you it's not a mess.
Right.
But be careful, because when your faith starts to be all about that, picking out the problems in yourself, in other people, in the church, you do lose your joy. And, you know, Scripture tells us the joy of the Lord is our strength. And if we really believe that, then we have to be we have to remember that we're vulnerable to sin, error, and attack when we lose our joy. So we have to cultivate joy. And that means sometimes putting some distance between ourselves and those people, those habits, and those situations that leech our joy and lead us into sin.
888-318-7884. If you suffer from spiritual perfectionism, you are welcome to call. Colleen Carroll Campbell is our guest. 888-31-TRUTH is that number. It strikes me that there's also this thing, Colleen, that where our society has something about of a perfectionism about words. If you say something the wrong way, and we call, you know, often we hear the term politically correct, but it's even worse. It's a very pernicious thing about constantly policing each other's speech. I don't know where I'm exactly going with that, but that does not seem like a very Christian response.
No, it's not. And in a certain sense, it's a form of secular scrupulosity, right? I mean, you know, we're scrupulous about scouring each other's statements. And, you know, it's this intolerance of human weakness, intolerance of the fact that sometimes somebody has a bad day, says the wrong thing. I mean, heaven forbid, you know, you walked around with a tape recorder behind me all day and night and I didn't say something that I would be embarrassed. You know, this is part of being human. We have to accept that in ourselves. We have to also extend it to others, even our enemies.
Well, what about St. Benedict? Do you have St. Benedict in your book? St. Benedict, he's really kind of the father of Europe, and all because he made this very simple rule for monks. So where does he fit into this picture?
Well, he's interesting because you think of Benedict and you think of balance and this balanced life that sprouts from this rule that's very ordinary in many ways. So I was surprised to find in my research that Benedict was a really fiery person. I mean, he was a real spiritual striver. He's living in the cave for years. His first attempt at leading a monastic community ended in disaster. The monks tried to poison him. They ran him out on a rail. And part of that was his overly, I think, high expectations of himself and others in community life. And it was out of that failure that he crafts this rule and he starts again with something that's more realistic about our human weakness and our limitations. And one of the best things Benedict can do for us today, especially those of us who struggle with workaholism, wanting to do more and more and more, is to remind us of our limits. When it's time to pray, drop the work and go pray. When it's time to play, drop the work and go play. And if more of us respected our limits, I think we could follow this Benedictine way to real holiness.
But I don't know if it's the Benedict option, but it's certainly the Benedict lesson that there's a lesson there. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he shows us that limits can be a good thing. I think we're so used to saying, got to have it all, got to want it all, got to do it all. And Benedict reminds us, you know, all comes in heaven.
Right.
Here we have limits. Here we're weak. Here we screw up sometimes. And God is there with his grace, even in our mess.
The book, The Heart of Perfection, How the Saints Taught Me to Trade My Dream of the Perfect for God's, is from Simon & Schuster, which means you can get it anywhere, right?
Yes, anywhere. Amazon and Barnes & Noble and your local Catholic or indie bookstore, pretty much anywhere.
Very good. Very good. Terrence is our next caller. Terrence is in Rhode Island, listening on 88.5 FM. I believe, Terrence, that the female version of your name is Therese. And we were talking just a little while ago about Therese of Lisieux. Terrence, happy to have you. Your question for Colleen Carroll Campbell.
Hi.
Hi.
My question, sorry, I might have some difficulty formulating it, but you, somebody called, a man in RCIA called in earlier, and he was talking about anxiety and discerning the will of God, and you talked to him about patience. And then you were talking about Jansenism and, extreme behaviors. So I guess my question for you is, patience is always a good thing to have, and God works slowly. Sometimes we hear stories of saints taking very drastic actions, like Saint Thomas Aquinas, scaring off a prostitute with a red hot poker. I heard this.
Right.
And even what you mentioned earlier about St. Francis of Assisi stripping himself naked in front of his father and the bishop, which I heard of too. I mean, that's very that doesn't immediately strike one as patient. So I guess my question was I'm thinking of doing a fast, and I know you're not here to really to give spiritual direction, but my question is, can you can have a sense of urgency and take extreme action that is good, that is motivated by the love of God, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, I don't... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. What's the difference between, say, having compulsion in the moment, being like, I have to do this, and the sense of urgency that comes from, like, a holy desire, the sense of, like, no, I'm not going to put this off. I'm going to do it now, because now is the day the Lord has made. Like, what's the difference?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I certainly don't mean to imply we want to compromise with sin. There is no compromise with sin. God hates sin because it separates us from him. And so we don't want to have any tolerance for sin either. However, I think we do have to have tolerance with our weakness and with the limits of life and how quickly we can figure out what to do. Even in Francis's big moment, that was years in the making. And so I think it's important to be in connection with others. I think a good spiritual director is always helpful, a regular confession. And we can get some advice from others. A lot of these recovering perfectionist saints really started to make strides when they opened up to others and kind of tested some of these ideas to make sure they weren't just completely going off in their own direction. I think you're absolutely right. Sometimes God does call us to do radical things for him. In fact, a lot of these saints did some really radical things after they began to recover from perfectionism, partly because they were no longer worried what the world thought of them. But I think we always have to remember it's rooted in prayer, and we do have to give God a little time to speak to us. But there can be a time when it is time to act, and perfectionism can actually hold us back. It can become this procrastination, whereas if I can't do it all perfectly, I'm just going to keep waiting and waiting and waiting until the time is perfect. So it's really a matter, I think, of discernment. And I do think a good spiritual director or confessor can help us work through the particularities of our own situation better than, you know, we could just kind of tossing off an answer here or there, but rooted in prayer always.
Terrence, is that convincing to you that a spiritual director can be helpful in those things?
Yeah, because, I mean, I think probably the difference, I mean, it's subtle and it's not subtle, but I think the difference is probably really like in the details, you know, because, I mean, you need to go into a lot more detail about the particular situation. So it actually does make sense you'd need a spiritual director who you could talk about the situation with more fully.
Just a little bit of advice. You don't get Angelique Arnauld's spiritual director. Get somebody else. Stay away from that guy, whoever that was. Thank you very much, Terrence, for that call. I want to try to get John here in Fort Royal, Virginia, listening on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 130, EWTN. John, your question for Colleen.
Hi. So it's Front Royal, Virginia.
Oh, okay. All right. Front Royal.
Yeah, Front Royal, not Fort Royal.
I gotcha.
I guess it's kind of half question, half comment. I just wanted to get her insights. One of the biggest stressors for me
We lost John, but I'm going to tell you what he told the call screener, and then maybe we'll get him back. But in any case, he can listen. It's the emphasis on politics among Catholics instead of the emphasis on the teaching of the church that he's saying creates a loss of joy.
I think that's good. I mean, our faith is not a set of policy positions. It's not a party platform. That doesn't mean we're not going to have strong preferences on certainly on the life issues. I mean, that's a, you know, pretty clear issue. We've got to be obviously staunchly in support of life, but we don't want to reduce our faith to anything that will, you know, that's simply a policy platform that just lines up lockstep with whichever, you know, party's in power or whichever party we're lining up with. I think we have to always remember that God goes beyond, right? And we're faithful Americans, but we're faithful Catholics first. And we look to Jesus and his principles, and it's never going to be a completely neat and comfortable fit in this world. Jesus didn't say this world is where it's going to all work out. Everybody's going to support what you support, and you're going to find worldly leaders who are just exactly what you want. Now, you know, he said this world is going to be a struggle. And I think we constantly have to be careful not to be co-opted in any direction, and to always keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, who's the true perfecter of our faith, and fixed on the reality of heaven, that there's something better coming, and that's what we're living for.
Oh, that's John, thanks very much for that call. I'm sorry that we had the difficulty with the phone there. So you think we should think more about heaven? That will help us with some of this.
I think so. so. I mean, this isn't pie in the sky. Who cares what I do now? Because heaven's coming. Right. But I do think an eternal perspective shifts a lot of this, and it allows us to let a lot of things go.
Colleen Carol Campbell is the author of The Heart of Perfection, How the Saints Taught Me to Trade My Dream of Perfect for God's. You're going to want to get that, and you can do so wherever fine books are sold, even probably where lousy books are sold. It's not a lousy book, but it'll be in there. Colleen, thank you very, very much. Really appreciated the hour.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thanks for putting up with all of our tomfoolery this hour, too.
I had fun.
We were something less than professional. Oh, man. It's going to be good now, though. It's the game show. Trent Horn's coming in here. Trent, wake up. We need you for the game show. Game show starts in 6 minutes. Be right back.